cash. He is so juiced about taking Baker by surprise with the arrival of Anna and Floyd that he has ignored the fact that they will have another situation on their hands. That situation is named Irene. But first, Cash takes a moment to savor Baker's shock and obvious discomfort at seeing his wife and son. He looks caught. He is caught. The only thing better would have been if Ayers had come with Baker to the bar. But no, that would be cruel to Floyd. Cash will avoid compromising Floyd at all costs. He's learning what it's like to be the son of a philanderer. If it were only Floyd who had arrived unexpectedly, the scene would have been touching indeed. Floyd grabs Baker around the legs, and Baker, although seeming disoriented at first, squeezes Floyd tight, kisses the boy on the cheek, then squeezes him again. Cash has to admit, Baker is a good dad, very open with his affection, just like Russ used to be. Anna turns to Cash. She seems different here, on the island. Her hair is down, and she's into her second margarita, so she is super relaxed. Has Cash ever seen Anna relaxed? Maybe once, when she and Baker came to Breckenridge, but that time, Cash remembers, she had turned her hyper-competitive nature towards skiing. She was faster than Baker and more technically sound than Cash, and she had taken great pride in her superior speed and prowess. Now she is only competitive about her margarita drinking, and Cash can get behind that, especially since Irene, who is unaware of Anna and Floyd's arrival, waits at home.
Floyd missed him, Anna says. It wasn't until Baker left that I realized how much he does. The cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, the laundry. He coaches Floyd's basketball team, takes him to chess club on Sundays, and he's on the fundraising committee of Floyd's school, so the phone kept ringing with people donating things for a silent auction that I knew nothing about. I haven't given him nearly enough credit.
He told me you left him, Cash says. He eyes his own second margarita, half gone.
Am leaving, Anna says. I told him just seconds before your mother called with the news.
Ah, Cash says. He finds he's disappointed that Baker was telling the truth. It's a colleague of yours?
Louisa, Anna says. She raises a palm. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. I like men. I'm attracted to men. This came out of nowhere, but it's big and it's real.
No judgment here, Cash says. Any chance this might be a phase? Any chance you might salvage the marriage?
Nope, Anna says. But we can salvage the family, I'm pretty sure. We can have a functional divorced relationship with shared custody.
Baker approaches. I'd love to join you two for a drink, but I think we should get Floyd home, pronto. He's overheated.
Anna pulls out a 50 and leaves it on the bar, much to Cash's relief. I made a reservation at a place called St. John Guest Suites, Anna says. I didn't want to assume there would be room for both of us at the villa.
Oh, there's room, Cash says. You can cancel your room.
He then thinks of Irene.
Or keep it. You may want privacy, and you probably won't get your money back anyway.
Non-refundable, Anna confirms. But I'd love to see the place. And to see your mom, obviously.
Obviously, Cash says.
He tries to text Irene about their impending arrival, but his phone has no service on the North Shore Road.
Oh well, he thinks.
His mother has been through a bigger shock than this. She'll be fine. Then again, his mother has been through such a big shock that it feels unfair to pile on more. Cash is sitting in the back seat of the Jeep with Floyd, as though he too is a child. But he is also the architect of this mess. He alone knew Floyd and Anna were coming. He could have, should have, given Baker and Irene fair warning. Baker turns right. They wind up the hill, then pull up to the gate, which they've left open since their arrival. The house comes into view. Wait, Anna says. She turns to Baker. This is where you're staying?
This is the villa, Baker says flatly. My father's villa.
I don't believe it, Anna says. Baker doesn't respond. He parks and gets out of the car.
Come on, buddy, he says to Floyd. You want a tour?
Baker and Floyd head up the stone staircase to the main deck, with Anna and Cash following a few steps behind. Anna is plainly floored. Cash tries to remember what he felt like 6 days ago when he saw this place for the first time. He had been gobsmacked. Now, he takes it for granted.
Outdoor kitchen, Baker says. Pool, hot tub.
The pool has a slide, Floyd shouts. To another pool! This house has two pools, one on top and one at the bottom.
Anna stands on the deck and takes in the view. What was going on?
We're still not sure, Cash says. The helicopter crashed in British waters. Dad's boss, Todd, signed off to have his body cremated. We're waiting for the ashes and for a report from the crash site investigators, but it's tricky because the Brits are the authority, not the FAA or the Coast Guard. The pilot was killed. He was British. And a local St. John woman.
Local woman? Anna says. Did your father have a mistress here? Was he that cliché?
I think he might have been, yes, Cash says.
They step into the kitchen where Irene is sitting at the table. Her head is buried in her arms. She's asleep.
Your poor mother, Anna says. Don't wake her.
Irene raises her head, blinking.
Oh,
she says. She gets to her feet and offers a hand.
Hello, I'm Irene Steele.
Irene, Anna says. It's Anna. Anna Schaefer, Baker's wife. Irene steadies herself on the back of a chair.
Anna, she says, what are you doing here?
The question comes out as accusatory, just as Cash feared it might, but Anna wears a heavy suit of armor, so Irene's tone bounces right off of her.
I brought Floyd down, she says, and she opens her arms. I am so sorry about all of this. How awful it must be for you.
Irene stares at Anna for a moment. Then she walks right into Anna's arms, and the two women embrace. And Cash is as amazed that his mother is accepting comfort as he is that Anna is offering it. But he is also relieved. Baker and Floyd enter the kitchen. Floyd gets a hug and a kiss from Grammy, and then Baker announces that he's taking Floyd down to look at the beach.
That's fine, Anna says. Then someone should probably drive us to our hotel.
Hotel? Baker says.
I got a suite at a boutique place in Chocolate Hole, Anna says. I'm sorry, I wasn't sure how big this home was.
There are 9 bedrooms, Irene says. Stay here, please.
Floyd. We'll stay here, Baker says. Anna can go to the hotel.
With that, he takes Floyd's hand and leaves the kitchen, shutting the side door firmly for emphasis. Irene raises her eyebrows. Is something going on? Anna says, Baker and I are splitting. I've met someone else. Another surgeon at the hospital, actually. Her name is Louisa. Cash wishes he'd had a third margarita, or even a fourth, although he admires Anna's ability to just come out with the plain-spoken truth. Her tone is matter-of-fact and holds not even a hint of apology. Irene opens her mouth, then closes it, then starts to laugh. Cash cringes. Why is he the one who has to bear witness to this confession? Why didn't he go to the beach with his brother and nephew, or run upstairs to the guest room he has claimed as his own and hide under the bed? Why does he have to be standing here, watching his mother laugh at Anna's moment of coming out? Irene laughs so hard the tears leak from her eyes. She's trying to stop herself,
She struggles to catch her breath.
I'm sorry, Irene says finally. It's just, I didn't think anyone else in the whole world could take me by surprise, but you've gone and done it. You're leaving Baker for a woman?
A person, Anna says, and Cash wants to applaud. Another doctor, who also happens to be female, yes. I'll apologize for being the one to break up the family, Irene, but I won't apologize because Louisa is a woman.
Irene nods. Fair enough. I didn't mean to laugh at you. I'm a bit self-absorbed these days, but I appreciate your being direct. Would you like to stay for dinner?
I'm tired, Anna says, but thank you for asking.
It's just as well, Irene says. I have a delicate matter to discuss with the boys.
Delicate matter? Cash says. Did you get news?
Something like that, Irene says.
She smiles at Anna.
Thank you for bringing Floyd down. It's a lovely surprise. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Irene leaves the kitchen. When Anna turns to Cash, he expects her to be angry or offended, but she's beaming.
That went much better than I expected, she says.
Baker and Floyd come up from the beach, and the adults agree the best course of action is for all of them to drop off Anna at the St. John guest suites, and then for the menfolk to pick up dinner at Uncle Joe's barbecue. Baker seems nervous and agitated. He drives like a bat out of hell all the way to Chocolate Hole, and when he pulls into the driveway to drop Anna off, he says,
How many nights did you book?
Two, Anna says. And I thought you would come back with us.
No, Baker says, his voice like a hammer. As you can see, my mother needs me.
Cash is here to care for Irene, Anna says, but you have a child who needs you. I need you.
What you mean is that you need me to come home and be a parent because you're too busy to do it.
Cash glances at Floyd. He has headphones in and is fully engrossed in his iPad, but still.
Don't do this here, Cash says. I don't want to hear it, and neither does you know who.
Cash is right, Anna says.
I'm not leaving in 2 days, Baker says.
We'll discuss later, Anna says.
She gets out of the Jeep, grabs her bag, pokes her head in the backseat window.
Thanks for coming to get us, Cash. Floyd, I'll see you at some point tomorrow.
Floyd doesn't look up. Anna removes one of his earbuds.
See you tomorrow.
Okay, Floyd says. Bye.
Maybe she's not the most maternal presence, but Cash still finds his sister-in-law impressive. He notices her posture as she goes to greet the owners, trailing her roller bag behind her, the picture of extreme self-confidence, uncompromising in her principles.
A person, Anna said to Irene. Another doctor who happens to be female.
Cash chuckles and moves to the front seat, next to Baker.
Don't kill me, he says.
Turns out, Baker isn't angry. Scratch that, he is angry, but his anger is secondary to his panic. He had told Ayers he would take her to Keneal Bay the following night, dinner, hotel, the whole enchilada.
I had to text her and cancel, Baker says.
His voice is low, even though Floyd still has his headphones in.
I told her our sister showed up unexpectedly.
Our sister? Cash says. You lied to her?
I didn't lie, Baker says. She's your sister.
She's my sister-in-law, Cash says. She's your wife.
I couldn't very well tell Ayers my wife showed up.
Estranged wife, Cash says.
You could have said your estranged wife showed up with your child out of the blue, and you need a few days to deal with it.
Ayers is cool. She would understand.
Ayers is cool, Baker mimics. You have no idea whether she's cool or not cool. Stop pretending like you know her better than I do.
I wasn't saying that, but I have spent time with her, and I do happen to think she's cool.
I hiked with her, and we went on Treasure Island together.
I'm sure it comes as a crushing blow, but she likes me.
She may like you just fine, Baker says, but she likes me more.
All women like me better, Cash, starting with that sweet little, what was her name?
Claire Bellows, Cash thinks.
Claire Bellows, Baker says. I bet you still haven't forgiven me for Claire Bellows.
Claire Bellows was my girlfriend, Cash says, and you slept with her. Not because you liked her, but because you wanted to prove to me that you could.
You knew Anna and Floyd were coming, Baker says, and you didn't tell me. If you'd answered your phone, you would have known.
You're in love with Ayers yourself, Baker says, and that's why you didn't tell me Anna was coming.
You shouldn't have been on a date with Ayers, Cash says. You're pretending you're a single man, but you're far from it.
Baker pulls up in front of Uncle Joe's barbecue and puts the car in park.
Get chicken and ribs, Baker says, and a bunch of sides.
I need money, Cash says.
You've got to be kidding me, Baker says. I've paid for everything on this trip. You haven't paid once.
I told you my bank card doesn't work down here.
That's bullshit and you know it, Baker says.
What's the issue?
You own a business, right? A business that Dad handed you on a silver platter.
Are the stores not making money?
Cash stares at the dashboard. He's going to punch his brother. He clenches and unclenches his fists. They are right downtown. People are everywhere. Floyd is in the back seat. He has to control himself.
The stores failed, Cash says. They're gone. The bank owns them now.
Baker throws his head back to laugh. Cash gets out of the Jeep, but instead of going to Uncle Joe's barbecue, he storms off toward the post office and the ferry dock. Baker yells from the car,
Cash, where are you going, man?
Listen, I'm sorry.
Cash doesn't turn around. He ducks behind a tree and watches Baker drive past, looking for him.
Cash isn't flat broke. He still has $12, which, because it's now happy hour at high tide, will buy him another margarita. An hour later, he's buzzed and he's indignant. The heinous things Baker said roll through his mind one after the other.
You're in love with yourself. A business Dad handed you on a silver platter. She likes me more. All women do. Claire Bellows. Are the stores not making money?
Baker thinks he's superior to Cash, the alpha. He has always thought that. And maybe Cash had thought it too. But Baker isn't going to win this time. Not if Cash can help it. He calls Ayers' cell phone. He vaguely recalls that she's busy tonight, not work, some other commitment. But she answers on the second ring.
Cash, she says, is that you? Is everything all right?
He breathes in through his nose. He tries to sound sober, or at least coherent.
Baker canceled your date for tomorrow night? He says. He told you our sister arrived on island?
He did, Ayers says. I didn't realize you guys had a sister. Neither of you mentioned her before.
We don't, Cash says. We don't have a sister. Baker was lying.
Oh, Ayers says.
The person who showed up was his wife, Anna, and she brought their son, Floyd.
Oh, Ayers says. He told me they'd split. That she left him.
She's leaving him, yes. Cash says, that part is true. For another doctor at the hospital where she's a surgeon. But she's here now with Floyd. Baker didn't know they were coming.
He didn't?
Ayers says. He didn't at all, Cash says. He was blindsided and he didn't want you to know. So he lied and said it was our sister.
I see, Ayers says.
I'm pretty drunk, Cash says.
He's standing in Powell Park near the gazebo. The sun is setting and the mosquitoes are after him.
Do you think you could come give me a ride home?
I wish I could, Ayers says. I'm busy, I'm sorry.
Cash takes a breath. He's come this far. He might as well go the rest of the way.
Ayers, I have something to tell you. I'm in love with you.
Oh, Cash, she says. Please don't make this complicated. You're a great guy. You know I think that.
But you have the hots for Baker, Cash says, because that's how things always go. Women think I'm a great guy, but they have the hots for Baker.
He's shouting now, and he has attracted the attention of a West Indian policewoman who crosses the street toward him.
You really shouldn't be interested in either of us. Do you know why?
No, Ayer says. Why?
Russell Steele? Rosie's boyfriend? The Invisible Man? Cash says.
Yes?
Ayer says. She sounds scared now.
Yes?
He was our father,
Cash says. And he hangs up the phone. Huck. Hard things are hard. And there's no instruction manual when it comes to parenting. Or in Huck's case, step-grandparenting, a 12-year-old girl. His dinner with Irene, instead of heading in an amorous direction as he had hoped, ended with a quandary. Irene was dead certain Maya was Russ's blood daughter. Huck had been skeptical. Why wouldn't Rosie have just said so? Why make up the story about the pirate and then pretend the Invisible Man was a different guy? Rosie was prone to drama. Maybe she wanted her life peopled like a Marvel comic. To prove her point, Irene brought Huck a framed photograph. Rosie with an older gentleman lying in a hammock. Russell Steele. But in the photo, Russ was wearing sunglasses. There was something in his face that was replicated in Maya's face, but without seeing his eyes, Huck couldn't be 100% sure. Then Irene scrolled through the pictures on her phone and found a good, clear picture of her husband's face. Yes, Huck thought. There was no denying it. Maya had the same crease between her eyes, the same slight flange to the tip of her nose, the exact same smile.
Uncanny, Huck said.
She's his, Irene said.
Yes.
Yes, you see it?
I do.
Huck remembered back to when he and Ayers told Maya that Rosie was dead. She had said, "What about my father?" She knew. They'd told her, maybe. She was 12, old enough to understand. It also explained why Russell Steele paid for Rosie's living expenses and Maya's tuition. Huck had checked Rosie's bank account balances. She had $7,000 in her checking and a whopping $85,000 in savings, and it looked as though Maya might have some kind of account in the States. Huck would need to hire a lawyer to get access to that money on Maya's behalf, and he supposed he would need to legally take custody, although his distrust of lawyers and his distaste for paying their exorbitant fees had kept him from doing anything just yet. The custody question was a moot point, or so he had assumed. No one on this island was going to dispute his claim to the girl, not even the Smalls, Rosie's father's people. So there was no sense of urgency. Until now, maybe.
I'd like to meet her, Irene said.
Huck could not put the inevitable off any longer. He needed a cigarette.
I'd like to smoke, he said.
I'll join you, she said.
They stepped out onto the deck where Huck lit up. He took a much-needed drag, then handed the cigarette to Irene.
Or I could light you your own.
A whole cigarette would be wasted on me, Irene said, though she inhaled off his deeply. I know she's not related to me.
Just let me think a minute, Huck said. I need to consider Maya. Maya's emotional state, Maya's best interests.
I don't think there are blueprints for this, Irene said. The circumstances are unique.
I, for one, can't accept the information that Russ has a child, a daughter, without wanting to meet her.
What do you hope to get out of it?
Huck asked. I'm not sure, Irene said. I loved him. She's his. I think my motives are pure.
You think?
The boys, Baker and Cash, are her brothers.
Half-brothers.
Fine, half-brothers. But that's still blood. That's still family. Huck didn't like where her reasoning was headed. He was Maya's family. He had been the third person to hold her after she was born. He had taught her how to cast a line, bait a hook, handle the gaff. He drove her to school, packed her lunches, signed her permission slips. It rankled him that the boys, Baker and Cash, shared blood with Maya when he did not. Irene was a perceptive woman. She put a hand on his arm. I'm not going to take her from you, Huck. I just want to meet her. Let her know we exist. She's 12 now. Even if we don't tell her, she'll find out eventually and there will be resentment aimed at you.
Let me think about it, Huck said. I'll call you by Wednesday night.
Thank you, Huck, Irene said. Thank you for even considering it. She gazed up at him, her eyes shining. She looked, in that moment, as young and hopeful as a woman in her 20s. Huck flicked the butt of the cigarette over the railing. It was time for him to leave. Irene stood on her tiptoes and kissed his cheek. It was official. Despite the bizarre, twisted chain of events that brought them both here, he liked her. On Wednesday, he picks Maya up from school at noon. She has a half day, and he didn't schedule an afternoon charter because they have an important mission. They stop by home to grab the things they need. Huck loads the buoy, rope, and anchor into the back of the truck. Maya emerges with a paper lunch bag. 30 minutes later, they are in the Mississippi, heading for the BVIs. It's a clear day, cloudless. The sun is so hot it paints fire across the back of Huck's neck. He pulls his bandana out and imagines it's still damp with Irene's tears. He hasn't been able to think of much besides Irene. Half because he's starting to feel something for her. Half because she has asked him to make an impossible decision.
How was your night with Ayers?
Huck has been so preoccupied with Irene that he has neglected to ask until now. Maya is facing into the wind, wearing an inexpensive pair of plastic sunglasses that she decorated with seashells she and her mother collected on Salomon Beach. Impossible to reach Salomon Beach had been Rosie's favorite. Maya has a faraway expression on her face, and Huck wonders what's going on in that mind of hers. He nearly repeats the question, but then Maya says, "It was fine. I think Ayers is having man problems."
"Oh, really?" Huck says. "Someone new, or is she still hung up on Mick?"
"Someone new," Maya says. "A tourist, I think."
"Bad news," Huck says.
He casts a sidelong glance at Maya.
"You're not allowed to date until you're 30, by the way."
"We saw Mick at Pizza Bar in Paradise," Maya says. "He told me he still loves Ayers."
"Oh, boy," Huck says. "Sounds like you had an educational night."
"She likes the tourist," Maya says. "But they had a date for tonight and he canceled. She was upset. I told her she should go back out with Mick. I like Mick."
"I know you do," Huck says. Huck likes Mick, too. Mick always buys him around at the beach bar, and he buys Huck's fish for the restaurant. But Mick had gotten mixed up with one of the little girlies working for him, and Ayers gave him the boot. Now she's interested in a tourist? No, Huck thinks, not a good idea. Although Huck, of course, has no say. Huck steers the boat past Yost and up along the coast of Tortola.
He's in British waters now, and he expects to be stopped by Her Majesty's Coast Guard. Huck isn't allowed to be over here without going through customs, but the Border Control and BVI police boats must all be at lunch or at the beach, because he moves toward their destination unimpeded. North of Virgin Gorda, southeast of Anegada. It's a haul, which, he supposes, is why Russ and Rosie decided to take a bird. It was only an irresponsible decision because of the weather. It must have seemed like a good gamble, though. And if Huck had all the tea in China and a bird at his disposal, he might have chanced it as well. They pass Treasure Island, which is on her way from Norman Island to Yost Van Dyke, and Maya starts waving her arms like crazy.
Ayers is working today, she says.
Does she know what we're doing today? Huck asks.
I didn't tell her, Maya says. I didn't tell anyone.
Treasure Island is past them now, and the Mississippi catches some of her choppy wake. The boat bounces, but Maya enjoys it the way she might a ride at the amusement park. She's his girl. Hard things are hard. Maya asked to see the place where the helicopter went down. At first, Huck had resisted. What good would come from seeing the place where Rosie died so violently? But then Huck reasoned that any real-life visual would likely be less horrific than the pictures Maya held in her mind. They reached the general area of the crash, according to the coordinates Huck got from Virgin Island Search and Rescue when they delivered Rosie's body. A huge favor pulled by Huck's best friend, Rupert, who grew up in Coral Bay with the governor. Bodies are notoriously hard to recover from the Brits, and Huck cuts the engine. The water is brilliant turquoise. The green peaks of Virgin Gorda are behind them. Huck picks up the mooring, a white spherical buoy that Maya painted with a red rose and Rosie's name and dates. Huck had told Maya that the mooring isn't legal. It will likely be pulled within 24 hours. Maya doesn't care. She wants to go through the ritual of marking the spot.
We're here, Huck says.
Maya stands and holds the buoy, kisses it. Huck picks up the rope and tosses the anchor overboard. Maya throws the buoy over. The rose is pretty. She did a good job.
Should we say something? Huck asks.
I love you, Mama, Maya says. And Huck loves you too, even if he is too manly to say it.
Me? Too manly?
Huck says. He clears his throat.
I love you, Rosie girl. I'll love you forever. I just hope you're with your mama now. My precious Leanne.
Amen, Maya says.
Huck smiles, though a couple of tears fall. Leanne was the only one of them who ever went to church. Our Lady of Mount Carmel. She loved the priest, Father Abraham, who has an enviable charisma. But some of the faith must have rubbed off on Maya. She opens the paper lunch bag and produces a pink sphere. She holds it above the water with two pincer fingers and lets it go right next to the buoy. The water fizzes, just as it used to back in the day when Huck would make himself an Alka-Seltzer.
What is that?
Huck says. He's an ecologist by nature, so he's concerned.
Bath bomb, rose-scented, Maya says. Don't worry, it's organic.
They both peer over the side of the Mississippi until the rose-scented bath bomb dissolves.
For you, Mama, Maya says.
Huck waits a respectful moment. Just as he's about to start the engine, Maya pulls out a second bath bomb, this one pale yellow.
What's that? Huck asks.
Maya brings it to her nose and inhales deeply.
Pineapple mint, she says. My favorite. It's for Russ.
She drops it in the water.
For you, Russ.
He couldn't hope for a more natural segue,
And yet, when he starts to speak, there's a catch in his throat. He's about to change this kid's entire life. But he won't live forever. He's 61 now, and who's to say he won't drown or get struck by lightning, or die of a heart attack, or get bit by a poisonous spider, or have a head-on collision on the centerline road? If there's one thing Huck can say about Rosie, it's that she firmly believed she would live forever. And she didn't. So it's best to err on the side of caution. If Huck dies, the girl will have no one. Heirs, maybe. If Ayers doesn't move to Calabasas or Albany, New York with some tourist, but Ayers has no legal claim of guardianship.
Maya needs family.
A chance at family, anyway. And Irene is right. If Huck doesn't tell her now, she'll find out when she's older and hate him.
Speaking of Russ, Huck says.
Uh-oh, Maya says. She puts her elbows on her knees. Rests her chin in her hand.
Back when I told you the news, Huck says, you said that Russ was your father.
He is, Maya says. Was. They told me the truth on my birthday back in November. Russ is the pirate. We have the same birthmark.
Huck shakes his head. Russ has the birthmark?
The peanut, Maya says. In the exact same spot on his back.
No kidding, Huck says.
Maya's birthmark on the back of her shoulder is the shape and size of a ballpark peanut.
No kidding, Maya says. He was my birth father after all. I kind of already knew. We have the same laugh. We both love licorice. We're both left-handed.
Do you know anything else? Huck asks. Like where the guy was the first 7 years of your life?
No, Maya says. Mom said she would tell me the whole story when I was older, 15 or 16. When I could handle it better, she said.
Okay, Huck says. His job has been made both easier and more difficult. On the one hand, there's no need to pursue a DNA test if the birthmark story is true. Irene should be able to confirm. But on the other hand, Maya may not want to know the truth about her father.
Well, I've made a new friend recently.
Seriously? Maya says. I thought you hated people.
Huck gives a dry laugh.
My friend, Irene. Irene Steele, actually, used to be married to Russ.
Maya's face changes to an expression that is beyond her years. It's wariness, he thinks, the expression one gets when one senses a hostile presence.
Used to be? She says.
Honey, he says. Russ was married. While he was with your mom, the whole time, he was married to someone else. A woman named Irene. She flew down here when she learned he was dead, and she found me. She has two sons, one 30 years old, 128. They are your brothers.
My brothers? Maya says. I have brothers?
Half brothers, Huck says. Russell Steele is their father, and he's your father. Their mother is Irene. Yours was Rosie.
Okay, Maya says. She bows her head. Wait.
Wait. Huck has done irreparable damage. Something inside of her is broken or altered. Innocent, stolen, spoiled. She now knows she's the daughter of a cheat and a liar.
He loved Mama, Maya says.
I know, Huck says.
But love is messy, complicated, and unfair, Maya says, like she's reciting something out of a book.
That's a dim view. Huck says, I loved your grandmother very much. We were happy.
Mama used to say that.
Rosie might have known about Irene. Must have known, Huck thinks. It was one thing for Russell Steele to keep Rosie a secret from Irene. Could he really have kept both sides in the dark?
Did they ever explain where Russ went when he wasn't around?
Maya shrugs. Work?
Did they ever say what kind of work?
Business, Maya says. Finance, money, boring stuff.
Boring stuff indeed,
Huck says. He takes a sustaining breath. He has not ruined her. She had a clue, an inkling, that Russ was keeping secrets. Huck is grateful that Rosie and Russ didn't see fit to burden Maya with any information about Russ's business, even though Huck is dying to know what the guy was into.
Okay, now for the tricky part.
Tricky? Maya says.
My new friend Irene, Russ's wife, wants to meet you. And she'd like you to meet her sons. They aren't taking you from me. They're not taking you anywhere. They just want to meet you.
But why? Maya says. Wouldn't they hate me? I'm the daughter of Russ's girlfriend. Even though Mama is dead, wouldn't they want, I don't know, to pretend like I don't exist? Wouldn't that be easier?
Easier for sure, Huck thinks. Part of it is that they're curious. Part of it is that, well, your mother was right about love being complicated. Irene loved her husband, and you're his child, so...
Huck can't quite make the transitive property work here, much as he wants to.
She's interested in you.
Maya blinks. If she were any older, she might take offense to how objectifying that sounds. Interested. The way one becomes interested in astronomy or penguins.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's say we found out that your mom had another child. A son, say, that you never knew about until now. You love your mother, and maybe you feel betrayed that your mother kept this big, important secret. You would still want to meet your brother, right?
I guess, Maya says. Do I have a secret brother?
Not on your mother's side, Huck says. I can vouch that your mother has been pregnant only once, and that was with you. But what I'm telling you is that you have two brothers. They want to meet you, and their mother Irene wants to meet you. But you're in control. If you say no, I'll politely decline.
Will they be upset if we decline? Maya asks.
Maybe, Huck says, but that shouldn't affect your answer. You wouldn't be meeting them so they feel better. You'd be meeting them because you want to.
Huck pauses. The sun is bearing down on him.
I know that may sound selfish, but you have to trust me here. If you want to meet them, we'll meet them. If you'd rather not, that's fine. More than fine.
Maya leans over the side of the Mississippi and peers into the water. Both the bombs have dissolved. All that remains on the surface are soap bubbles, like one would find in dishwater. Huck doesn't want Maya to contemplate this particular spot for too long. The depths of this sea, the darker water below where Rosie's body landed. I'll meet them, Maya says. But if I don't like them, I don't ever have to see them again, right?
Right, Huck says.
You promise?
I promise.
Huck is proud of her. She is brave and fierce and incorruptible. Huck can't believe he thought that either he or Irene Steele or her sons could ruin Maya Small. No matter what happens with all of this, Huck thinks, Maya is going to be fine. Baker. At 8:30 at night, after Floyd and Baker have eaten the barbecue, chicken, ribs, pasta salad, coleslaw with raisins, rice and beans, and fried plantains, there's a knock at the door. Somewhere in the house, Winnie barks. Who could it be? Baker wonders, and he wishes they'd left the gate down. He feels ill. He just indulged in some world-class stress eating, shoveling food in without even tasting it.
and he can't imagine who could be at the door this late. It's not Cash. He would have sauntered right in. Maybe the police have shown up with Cash in custody. Maybe something happened to Cash. He hitchhiked home with the wrong person. Or he was trying to hitch a ride and a driver didn't see him and mowed him over. Maybe he did something desperate. Baker shouldn't have teased him about Ayers, nor about Claire Bellows. And he should never have forced a confession about the stores. They both went under. They're gone. Even though Baker had predicted that would happen, he feels no joy in the reality. Poor Cash. He just wasn't meant to run a business. It could be Anna at the door, Baker supposes, although she would have to be a homing pigeon to find this place in the dark. There are no neighbors on this road. He asks Floyd to run upstairs, brush his teeth, and put on his pajamas. No, Floyd says. Normally, Baker has a deep well of paternal patience, but he senses that this knock means bad news of some kind. Please, buddy, Baker says.
I'm scared, Floyd says, and Baker realizes that Floyd has every reason to be scared. This is a huge, unfamiliar house. Even Baker can't recall which room he put Floyd's suitcase in. Baker wants to tell Floyd that he too is scared, of things far more terrifying than shadows and strange noises. It's probably a taxi driver who picked up Cash and now is demanding to be paid. Baker opens the door to find a tall, hulking West Indian man, and initially he thinks his guess is correct. Hello? Baker says. He searches the darkness beyond the man for signs of his brother. The man thrusts forward a square cardboard box.
For you, the man says. Mr. Steele's remains.
Mr. Steele's remains? Baker reaches out to accept the box, and the man turns to go.
Wait, Baker says. Who are you? Where did you come from? I'm Douglas Vickers, Paulette's husband, the man says. Those came to her office today, and she asked me to deliver them here.
Oh, Baker says. In the moment, this makes sense.
Thank you.
Douglas gives Baker and Floyd half a wave and disappears down the stone staircase, leaving Baker to hold what remains of his father. The ashes have been delivered to the door like a pizza.
Daddy? Floyd says.
There is likely a barrage of questions coming as soon as Floyd can figure out what to ask, but for now, he just seems to need reassurance.
Everything is okay, bud, Baker says. I'll be back in 1 second. You stay right here.
Baker turns to check that Floyd is standing in the doorway. Then he goes flying down the curved stone staircase after Douglas. He catches the man just as he's climbing into a white panel van.
Excuse me, Mr. Vickers, sir?
Douglas Vickers stops, one leg up in the van, one on the ground, his face framed by the open driver's side window.
Yes? You were the one who identified my father's body, is that right?
Baker asks. Douglas Vickers nods once.
I did.
You saw him? Baker asks.
And he was dead?
Douglas Vickers gives Baker a blank stare. Then he hops into the truck and backs out through the gate. Once Baker gets Floyd to sleep, thankfully, Anna remembered to pack a few picture books, including The Dirty Cowboy, which reliably knocks Floyd out by the end of page 6, he heads down the hallway to the room Irene has been using and knocks on the door.
Come in, Irene says.
His mother is sitting on the side of the bed, fully dressed, as if she has been waiting for Baker to knock.
Is Floyd asleep? She asks.
Baker nods.
Good, Irene says, because I have to talk to you and your brother.
Okay, Baker says. Cash isn't home. I left him off in town when I got the barbecue.
Whatever for? Irene asks.
He jumped out of the car, actually, Baker says. We had an argument. I wasn't very nice. I was upset. He knew Anna and Floyd were coming, and he didn't tell me.
He didn't tell me either, Irene says. I had no idea who Anna was when I saw her. I introduced myself to her. She was so out of context, and I haven't laid eyes on her for so long.
3 years, Baker says.
Anna hasn't been back to Iowa City since just after Floyd's first birthday.
Listen, Mom. Anna and I are getting a divorce.
She told me, Irene says. She's fallen in love with a person named Louisa.
Baker's eyebrows shoot up. She told you that?
She did.
Well, yes, Baker thinks she should have. It was Anna's news. The dismantling of their family was Anna's doing. I'm sorry. I'm sure you're disappointed.
Hard to register any kind of feeling about Anna, I'm afraid, Irene says. She's always been a mystery.
You should probably also know, if he hadn't told you already, that Cash lost the stores. They went belly up.
Irene gives Baker a sharp glance. He hasn't told me, no. I figured as much, but it's Cash's responsibility to tell me, not yours.
Right, Baker says.
He knows his mother favors Cash, or feels more protective of him than she does of Baker.
None of my business, sorry. So listen, Mom, a gentleman just stopped by.
Gentleman? Irene says. Was he older, with a reddish beard?
Huh? Baker says.
His mother is on her feet now, at the front window, searching.
No, it was a West Indian gentleman. Paulette's husband, Douglas. He brought Dad's ashes.
Dad's ashes? Irene says. Where are they?
Downstairs, Baker says.
They get to the kitchen just as Cash stumbles through the door. Baker can smell him from across the room. Tequila. He opens the refrigerator door.
Any barbecue left? Plenty, Baker says.
He's relieved that Cash seems to be either numbed or neutralized by alcohol, and that there will be no rehashing of their earlier argument. As Cash pulls the various to-go containers out of the fridge, Irene cuts open the cardboard box.
Actually, Cash, you may want to wait on eating, Baker says.
Fuck you, Cash says. I'm starving.
How'd you get home? Baker asks.
That tall chick that works at La Tapa picked me up outside Mongoose Junction, Cash says. Tilda, her name is.
Yeah, I know who you mean, Baker says.
I guess she has the hots for Skip, the bartender, Cash says.
Funny. We've been here less than a week, and we know everyone else's personal drama.
There's a sound. It's Irene, wailing in hoarse, ragged sobs. She's holding a heavy-duty Ziploc bag that contains white and pale gray chunks. Without warning, she collapses on the kitchen floor. For an instant, both Baker and Cash stare. They are grown men, and they have never seen their mother act like this. Baker, although not surprised, he's been wondering if his mother would break, if she would finally act like a woman who has tragically lost her husband, instead of a woman moving around in an extended state of shock, doesn't know what to do. Cash is holding the takeout containers of food and a bottle of water, seemingly paralyzed. Cash is better when dealing with their mother. Do something, Baker thinks. Cash sets the food down and approaches Irene cautiously, as though she's a ticking bomb or a rabid dog.
Mom, hey, let's get you up. Can you sit at the table?
Irene cries more loudly, then she starts to scream. Words, phrases, Baker can't make sense of much. He keeps checking the stairs,
The last thing he wants is for Floyd to wake up and see his grandmother like this.
I trusted him. Bad back, clients in Pensacola. I never checked, never questioned, never suspected a thing. Greed, the money, the house. I was married to the house. Secrets are lies. They're lies. I never suspected. Why would I suspect? Your father was so effusive, so loving. It was too much sometimes. I used to tell him it was too much. I told him to tone it down. It was embarrassing.
She stops.
Can you imagine? I was embarrassed because your father loved me too much. Because I wasn't raised like that. My parents told me they loved me once a year, maybe, and I never heard them say it to each other. Never once. But they did love each other. They just showed the love in their actions, the way they treated each other. Honor, respect. They didn't keep secrets like this one.
Mom, Baker says, but he doesn't know what to add. She's right. Their father was demonstrative, verging on sappy. He exuded so much, I love you, please love me back, that Baker at least, and probably Irene and Cash as well, saw it as a weakness. Had it all been an act then? Baker wonders. Or had the three of them done such a pitiful job of returning Russ's love that he'd sought affection elsewhere? Irene holds up the plastic bag.
This is all that's left. All that's left!
She flings the ashes across the kitchen. The bag hits the cabinets and slaps the floor. Thank goodness the seal held, Baker thinks. Otherwise, they would be sweeping Russ up with a broom and dustpan. Cash gets Irene to a chair at the kitchen table while Baker picks up the ashes. Across the label of the bag, it says, Steel Russell, DOD 1119. Baker sits down on the other side of his mother. Cash has brought a pile of paper napkins to the table. He's trying to put his arm around Irene, but she's resisting, possibly because he smells like a Mexican whorehouse.
Just let me,
Irene says. Baker studies the contents of the plastic bag. The pieces are chalky and porous. The remains look like a few handfuls of coral on the beach in Salt Pond. It's a sobering, nearly ghastly thought. You live a whole life filled with routines, traditions, and brand new experiences, and then you end up like this. Baker can't let his mind wander to the mechanics of cremation. Your body, which you have fed and exercised and washed and dressed with such care, is pushed into a fiery inferno. Baker shudders. And yet, there is no escaping death. No escaping it. Every single one of us will die, as surely as every single one of us has been born. Baker is here today, but one day he will be like Russ. Gone. He, for one, is glad the ashes have finally arrived. They all needed closure. Baker checks the cardboard box for the name or address of the funeral home, but finds neither. It's just a plain box, sealed with clear packing tape. The bag is just a bag, labeled with Russ's name and date of death. How do they know this is even Russ? He wonders. It could be John Q. Public. It could be Coral from Salt Pond. Baker had asked Douglas point blank, did you see my father? Was he dead? And Douglas had stared. Now, maybe he'd stared at Baker like that because he thought the question was rhetorical. Maybe he thought the question was coming from a man half crazed with grief, ready to grasp at any straw. But maybe... the stare meant something else. Irene blots her nose and under her eyes with a paper napkin.
I need you boys to promise me something, she says.
Anything, Cash says. But Baker refrains. Cash can be his mother's acolyte, but Baker is going to hear what Irene is asking before he commits.
What is it, Mom? Baker says.
Don't be like him, Irene says. Don't lead secret lives. Cash laughs, which Baker thinks is in poor taste. No one intends to lie, Irene says, but it happens. Sometimes the truth is difficult, and it's easier to create an alternate reality or not to say anything at all. I can't imagine how soul-shredding it must have been for Russ to go back and forth. Rosie here, me in Iowa City. Baker looks at his brother. Irene knows about Rosie. Did Cash tell her?
Mom, Baker says.
Irene barks out a laugh. I found the photograph. Winnie helped me. And then I did some sleuthing. It must have destroyed your father deep inside to know he was betraying me and betraying both of you. She stops. Just promise me.
Promise, Cash says. Promise, Baker says.
And yet, you've both spent the better part of a week with me. Baker, you didn't tell me that you and Anna had split. Cash, you didn't tell me you'd lost the stores. The kitchen is very, very quiet for a moment.
Baker says, I didn't want to make you even more upset.
I thought it was irrelevant, Cash says. Petty, even, to bring it up when you had so much else going on. So you said nothing, time passed, and I had no idea about either thing. Which is why I'm asking you now to please not keep any secrets. Secrets become lies, and lies end up destroying you and everyone you care about.
Okay, Baker says.
Okay, Cash says. He rises to fetch Irene some ice water. He is such a kiss-ass, Baker thinks. But really, Baker is just jealous because he's better at predicting Irene's needs. Thank you, Irene says. I haven't exactly been forthcoming either, as I'm sure you both realize.
Cash says, Mom, you don't have to. Let her finish, Baker says.
I tracked down Rosie's small stepfather, Irene says. He's a fishing captain by the name of Huck Powers. He was the one who came for dinner last night. He helped me jimmy the door to the bedroom at the end of the hall.
What bedroom at the end of the hall? Baker says.
Cash shrugs. Irene says, the door at the end of the hall was locked, and I wanted to see what was in it. I thought maybe I would find something that would explain all this. She holds up her arms.
What was it? Cash asks.
A bed, Irene says. Furniture.
Oh, Baker says. With that kind of build-up, I thought maybe you discovered something.
I did, Irene says. Because painted on the wall in decorative letters was a name. Maya.
Who's Maya? Baker asks.
Irene takes another sip of her water. Maya is Russ's daughter, she says. Your sister.
Funny. We've been here less than a week, and we already know everyone else's personal drama.
Those words, spoken by Cash, contain some truth. But who are they kidding? Nobody can hold a candle to the Steele family when it comes to personal drama. Russ has a daughter, 12 years old, named Maya. He was not only hiding this home, a mistress, and whatever it was he did for a living, he was hiding a child. Okay, fine, it happens. Baker knows it happens. There was a guy in Iowa City, Brent Lamplighter, his name was, he used to belong to the Elks Lodge, who had gotten a waitress in Cedar Rapids pregnant. That child was in kindergarten before anyone realized that it was Lamplighter's son. But Russ with a daughter? It's a punch to the gut. Another punch to the gut. Russ's deception knew no bounds.
The only thing more shocking than the news of Russ's daughter, Maya, is the revelation that Irene wants to meet Maya. She wants them all to meet Maya. Irene has asked Huck, Rosie's stepfather, if that would be possible. He's going to let her know by tomorrow. Before Baker goes up to bed, there is something he has to do. He steps out to the deck beyond the pool to call Ayers. The call goes straight to voicemail, which isn't surprising given the hour. It's nearly 11. It also isn't surprising because when Baker texted Ayers saying, "My sister showed up out of the blue and I can't do Keneal tomorrow night. What's the next night you're free?" There was no response. Maybe Ayers was busy with her other commitment, or maybe she was angry. Maybe she thought Baker was just another tourist who made pretty promises he had no intention of keeping. Baker can't let himself care why Ayers hasn't responded. He has feelings for her, but those feelings are cheapened because he hasn't been honest. "Ayers, it's Baker. I'd like you to listen carefully to this message. I lied today when I said my sister showed up out of the blue. It wasn't my sister. It was my wife, Anna, and my son, Floyd. Anna and I are estranged. She's staying at the St. John guest suite, so there was no reason I couldn't be honest about that, other than I thought you'd be angry or think some kind of reconciliation was going on, which I can assure you is not the case." Baker takes a breath. He hates when people leave him lengthy voicemails. He should hang up now and explain the rest when she calls him back. But what if she doesn't call him back? "The bigger issue is more than a lie. It's a deception. I never told you the real reason I'm on St. John. The real reason I'm here is because I'm Russell Steele's son. Russell Steele, your friend Rosie's lover, was my father. Cash and I had no idea he owned a villa here, no idea about Rosie. It's been a confusing time for us and for my mother. Despite the lie and the deception, I want you to know that my feelings for you are genuine. It was love at first sight." Baker wonders how to sign off. "Call me if you want to. Talk to you later. Good luck and Godspeed." In the end, he just hangs up. When he steps back inside the house, he's surprised to find his mother is still awake. She's at the kitchen table in her pajamas, with the bag of ashes and her phone in front of her. When she hears the slider, she raises her head. "I just got a text from Huck," she says. "He's going to bring Maya by tomorrow after school." "Great," Baker says. He has no idea if this is great or not, but his mother seems buoyed by the news. "I'm happy to meet Maya tomorrow, but I'm flying back to Houston with Anna and Floyd on Friday." Irene nods. That's the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do, Baker tells himself, no matter how much it feels like just the opposite.